I'm ready for it, man. I was the one that said this could happen, and when I'm right, it's going to be so, so sweet.
Why are the Browns giving away good players to other teams and getting nothing out of those good players when they have them? Because their organization is run like a lemonade stand at times.
Sometimes you're willing to overpay for guys just because you can't live with the alternative anymore. That's what the Bears did with Jermon Bushrod a couple years ago. They overpaid for him because all they were thinking was, we need a real NFL player here. Welcome to the MMQB podcast. I'm Robert Mays. He's Andy Benoit. The first round of dust has settled. We're a few days into free agency. It's time to see where the pieces are, see where they've fallen, see what teams spent way too much money, see what teams refuse to have spent any. It's a fun time of the year, Andy. I find myself getting both excited and completely frustrated at pretty much everything that happens. There are some moves that I love, some moves that I hate, but at least everything provokes a response this time of year.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. And some of the moves, you hate a certain part of all of them because the numbers have been inflated by the salary cap increasing. So that's just the new normal. The problem is this new normal doesn't necessarily equate to previous new normals. And so it looks like a lot of guys have gotten really overpaid.
So let's start with some of those guys. I mean, there's really no other place to start except with the Giants and what they've done through this entire process the last few days. They hand Olivier Vernon all of the money. I mean, they gave him all of it. All the money that anyone had, they gave it to Olivier Vernon, who made 5 years, $85 million, with, I believe, $52.5 million guaranteed. That is more money guaranteed than J.J. Watt received. It is more money guaranteed than any defensive player not named Ndamukong Suh and Marcell Dareus received. How do you feel about this?
Well, first things first, Olivier Vernon's a very fine player, and I think people haven't appreciated him enough over the years. I think he's a good all-around player. He plays the run extremely well for a guy of his body type especially. He can hold ground at the point of attack. He's able to rush and bend the corner as a rusher, which is how you become a consistent pass rusher, the ability to bend the knee and dip and get low. He has that. That said, he's obviously not in the J.J. Watt stratosphere. He's probably not quite in the Ndamukong Suh stratosphere. He's at the top of the second tier of NFL defensive ends. The Giants have been exceptionally bad in their pass rush the past few years, and that's an organization that has learned the values of a pass rush because they won two Super Bowls on the strength of it. So they know the perils of having a bad pass rush, and they overpaid drastically to correct that, to compensate for that. And I'm trying to understand where the extra $10 million guaranteed for Vernon came, because Malik Jackson pretty much set the mark along defensive linemen at $42 million guaranteed, and that, I believe, was a day or two earlier. So someone else, another team, must have been bidding for Vernon, because how did the money jump? I mean, another $10 million, that's 25% more guaranteed than Malik Jackson got. That's the part I don't understand, is how Vernon got over $40 million guaranteed.
Well, I mean, they play different positions, right? I think the idea that Vernon is an edge rusher, I think obviously those guys have a higher value than a guy like Malik Jackson's going to have. I think that line has become a little bit more blurred, but there's still the money you're going to shell out to an edge player is more than the money you're going to shell out to an interior player. That's just how that works. So, it's silly to say, God, he got paid more than J.J. Watt. How dumb is that? We know that's not how that works. It's a matter of market. It's a matter of how much money is available in the market, because that creates inflation for each individual free agent class. So it's a silly way to look at it. But in the end, the Giants still have him on the books for $19.5 million in 4 years. And it's not as if it's a really super front-loaded contract. It is in some ways. He gets a $7 million roster bonus in year one that really bumps up that $52.5 million guaranteed. But he gets a $4 million signing bonus every single year. So if they decide to cut him with 2 years left on his contract, that's $8 million in dead money. That's not nothing. So this is a very long-term commitment to a guy who has 29 career sacks.
No, it is. I get that. Now, on the other side of it, you know, New York, look at the way they have amplified their D-line, because they retained Jason Pierre-Paul at a pretty safe deal.
Yes.
And they signed Damon Harrison, which gives them a tremendous nose shade run stuffer. They're going to get Jonathan Hankins back, who was very good as a three technique. they're relatively deep, or they've got guys that they like, a guy like Jay Bromley or the guy from UCLA with all the O's and vowels in his name. I'm not even going to attempt it, but you know who I'm talking about. Their third round pick a year ago. He didn't get on the field much last year, so I haven't heard his name pronounced. But clearly they know how they want to play, and they've invested fully in the defensive line. Now, to me, and maybe you are going to go here later, but if they're going to go this hard along the D-line, it's a little interesting to me that they paid as much as they did to bring in Janoris Jenkins rather than just re-sign Prince Amukamara at a lesser deal. Because in theory, the better your defensive line can be, then naturally the better your cornerbacks become. So you don't need to invest in a superstar one because the pass rush will take care of so many factors. So do you have any idea why they would sign Jenkins for over $60 million and almost 30 of it guaranteed?
I mean, in my mind, it just seems like Jerry Reese is saying, I need this team to be a lot better right now. He's doing everything he can to make that happen. Janoris Jenkins is now the fourth highest paid cornerback in football when you look at guaranteed money. He got more than Aqib Talib. That's not my favorite.
I don't think Jenkins is that much better than Amukamara, though. I don't think he might be a tad better. He's certainly a little more dynamic, but that's a two-way street. As many big plays as Jenkins creates, he'll also give up that many. I know he didn't last year, but let's wait and see if he plays with discipline another year after this. I need to see more evidence from him there. So I struggle with that one because New York's issues on defense in the secondary have been very bad at safety, not cornerback. And so when you're throwing that kind of money at a guy to replace what was already a solid starter for you, I think that's where heads start to get scratched.
I agree. And I feel like that's a ton of money for a guy who has played with a great pass rush for his entire career in St. Louis. I mean, that he's never had to live life without one of the best pass rushers in football. Now, hopefully with Vernon and JPP, he won't have to live necessarily on the other side, but it's still not going to be what it was for the Rams for the most part. And then the other one, Damon Harrison got a ton
of
money.
Maze, can I interrupt you real quick? Because I think you touched on a really interesting point, something that occurs to me when you say that about, because you're right, Jenkins did play in a very good pass rush in St. Louis. And the one thing about him, he is a gambling corner, as we said. Yep. Amukamara is not. And when you have that good pass rush, you do have a little more freedom to gamble as a cornerback. So maybe that's what they saw in him, is that we're creating a pass rush. Let's go get a playmaking corner who can jump passing lanes because he knows the pass rush is getting home. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie's another corner like that. He's the guy playing opposite Jenkins. So maybe that is Jerry Reese's line of thinking. Now, he's paying a premium for it, but maybe he feels instead of getting just a solid cover guy and Amukamara, we want a playmaker to capitalize on the pass rush that we're investing in. You could very well be onto something there.
Well, that's fine. But you're also really extrapolating something you probably shouldn't extrapolate, because you can't say, oh, we're going to have the Rams pass rush because we have Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul. The Rams have Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn. And when they had Robert Quinn only a couple years ago, he was the best pass rusher in football. So you can't just say, we're going to have that pass rush, so let's go get a guy that's done well with that. That's really dangerous. And I think that's a ton of money for him. And you could say they invested even more money in their defensive line. But Damon Harrison, who got $24 million guaranteed, by the way, does not rush the passer. He is a really good run player. He's an incredible run defender as a nose tackle. He does not get after the quarterback. And $24 million for a guy who doesn't do that is a ton of money.
Yeah, it can be. You could argue that, well, if you've got a good run defender, then you create more pass rushing situations in the course of a game anyway, because you get first and second down stops, and that creates third and long. So maybe they feel like because the other thing, their run defense has been pretty good, but their linebacking core, it's been pretty good for what they have. Their linebacking core has never been good. Jerry Reese just must theoretically not believe linebackers are a premium position, because they haven't really signed a lot of guys at that position this year or in any other years. So I think they're deciding we need a dominant D-line first and foremost on every down, and the rest of the game will take care of itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what they're going with. I mean, the only deal of those that I like on its face is the JPP deal. I mean, that is low risk, very high reward if he can be, even if what he was for a good part of this year, $10.5 million, when you consider what Olivier Vernon got paid, is not a lot for Jason Pierre-Paul. So I think that's a good wait and see for them. That makes a ton of sense. The other team that spent, I mean, there's a couple more teams that spent a ton of money. The other one that jumps out to me pretty quickly here is Oakland. I mean, they also went and got some big names that were available, which we expected them to do. It's 5 years, $58.5 million for Kelechi Osemele with $25.4 guaranteed. Oh, maybe just the first 2 years are guaranteed. I think that's what it is based on the way that this is structured. It looks like there's not much dead money on there after the first 2 years. So that's nice, especially when you consider he's probably going to move positions if they can't retain Donald Penn, which I really hoped they were going to. My hope still is that they give Penn a short-term deal, put Osemele at left guard, Rodney Hudson at center, Gabe Jackson at right guard. That is a really good team. That's a very, very good offensive line. That's among the best offensive lines in football.
That's what I thought they were going for, and it was pointed out to me after I did my free agent breakdown that they might be putting Osemele at left tackle. He was fine in that role for Baltimore down the stretch last year. I hate what you're saying, though.
I hate that. I hate he was fine so he can play tackle. Why would you make the guy worse? That's why I really like with the Bears, they bring Bobby Massie. Yeah. Bobby Massey's not a superstar, but Bobby Massey's a competent NFL player now. And if you put him at right tackle and move Long back to right guard, you get better in two positions. So now if you put Osemele at left tackle and then you have to play with Jamarcus Webb or whoever it is at guard again, you get worse in two spots. I hate that.
I agree. And this is the Brandon Scherff discussion. Last year, he came in. I talked to teams about him, the teams who were drafting high. And they were saying, well, we see, you know, Scherff, I said, he looks like a guard to me. He's got shorter arms. He's stout like that. He's just built like a guard. He moves well in traffic. And they said, yeah, he probably is a better guard, and we'll try to translate him to right tackle. My question was, why? For the reason you're saying is if you've got a good guard, a great guard, take him. I mean, go with it. You think the Cowboys didn't appreciate Larry Allen in his prime? I'm not saying Osemele is Larry Allen, but the point is, if you've got a top five guard, which that is what Osemele is in the NFL, why would you mess around with that position? I agree with you fully. And the other part of it, if you move Gabe Jackson to right guard, he's a better player there because he's just his skill set's better fit for right. He can play left guard. I think he's a nice player. But his skill set fits right guard. So you're better at left guard, you're better at right guard, and you can still find a left tackle, and probably at a cheap rate, because what we talked about, Mays, with all the left tackles on the market, we thought they might be depressed in value this year because the teams with cap space didn't need left tackles, and there are a lot of first-round rookies coming in at the left tackle position. So I think you can sign a Russell Okung or a Donald Penn for a pretty cheap deal and plug them in, and like you said, have one of the league's better and bigger offensive lines.
I know they want to keep Penn. I mean, I know that on pretty good authority. That was their original plan. But if they can't do it, you would just assume they put Osemele there. On the defensive side of the ball, they also tossed around some money. Bruce Irvin, 4 years, $40 million, with, I believe, it was $19 million guaranteed. This is a deal that looks like a lot, right? $19 million guaranteed. Ton of money for Bruce Irvin. $37 million. He doesn't get that many sacks. He's been given a lot of shots. Do you know how much money the Raiders have to pay Bruce Irvin after 2017?
How much?
$0 if they don't want to. And that, when you were talking about free agency, that is when you run into trouble. When you give these guys long-term money and have obligations to them over several years, it ties up your ability to retain your own players, to give other people chances. Nobody worth re-signing on the Raiders is going to need to be re-signed before the end of 2017. Cleo Mack's not up before then, Derek Carr's going to be up then, and Amari Cooper's not going to be up then. So this doesn't preclude them from doing anything, and it makes them better. These are the type of deals that make total sense for teams in Oakland's position.
That's really smart analysis there, and because that my concern was, what are they going to do in a few years? They have to spend a bunch of money now because of the salary floor. And what are they going to do in a few years when these other guys, the guys you just mentioned, get up for their big second contracts? And all those guys will probably come close to setting the new market at their position. Certainly Mack will. And that's an expensive position, defensive end, as is quarterback, of course. I like the Irvin signing. Clearly, we see how Oakland wants to play. This is what I like about free agency in the draft, is teams tell you how they feel about their current personnel and their overall schematic philosophy by who they bring in. Ken Norton Jr. is the D coordinator in Oakland. Now, Jack Del Rio pretty much runs the defense, but Norton, they brought him in because of what he did with Seattle. He's familiar with that scheme. Well, obviously, Bruce Irvin plays well in the Seahawks scheme. They signed Malcolm Smith a year ago, and the other guy they got was Sean Smith in free agency. And Sean Smith over from Kansas City is a long, physical, strong corner who I imagine can play the boundary lock, press man type of play that they do in their cover three there in Seattle with Richard Sherman and in past years Byron Maxwell, which is that's the role Smith would play. He plays right cornerback. So it's clear that the Raiders, Del Rio likes to be he likes to think he's a versatile guy, and he is. He's done a lot of different things schematically, especially in Denver. But I believe in his heart of hearts, he's a pure 4-3 zone type of D coordinator. That's what he wants to play. That's what he's most comfortable with. And they're bringing in guys that can play that kind of football.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Smith is in a similar place when you consider the deal with Irvin. He has $4 million of dead money on his deal after the next two seasons. Not a ton. And it's only 3.75 after this season. They're giving him a lot of money up front, and that's a big deal. So I really like this. I mean, I think that they've got good players for not long-term deals, and they're really creeping up toward relevancy here. If they can bring back Penn, I think that offense gets really scary, and you added two playmakers to your defense. It makes a ton of sense to me overall.
They still need a safety in the worst of ways. They've got Alarius Sante there and Taylor Mays. And I bring that into the discussion because I think now Reggie McKenzie, their GM, has done such a good job. What you said, a relevant team. I think they can compete for an AFC West title this season, but they can't have a glaring hole at somewhere to overcome. And right now, safety is a glaring hole for them. So I think it's important they find someone, probably a linebacker as well. They need to get a little stouter in the middle of the defense downfield still.
Another team that spent a decent chunk of change, a lot of it on one guy. 6 years, $90 million, Malik Jackson to Jacksonville. $42 million guaranteed and $45 million over the first 3 years. You were on this early, man. I think you saw something like this coming, and it did. I'm not necessarily surprised. That's a ton of money for a guy that, I don't know, a guy that is not Ndamukong Suh or Gerald McCoy. He's right. He's probably on that second tier with the rest of those guys, but he's still not that top flight guy. And I guess if you're Jacksonville, this is the type of premium you have to pay to get guys in.
Maybe. What? Keep in mind with Jacksonville, people don't think about this, but Jacksonville, they're one of six NFL teams that play in a state that has no income tax. So their $85 million is worth more than like Oakland Raiders' $85 million. So I don't know if they should have to be paying a premium per se, because they already inherently have a premium to offer. I think a lot of guys would like to live in the city or the area of Jacksonville there in Duval County. I like the signing. I get that it's probably a little bit too much. I see what you're saying. I have the same concerns because Malik Jackson has been an ascending player to me, and we've seen guys, and I'm saying this is him at all, but we've seen guys before who ascend quickly early in their career. They win a Super Bowl. They're eager to cash in free agency, and anyone who talked to Jackson in the postseason last year could clearly see he was eager to do that. Let's hope that the fire stays there at the level it was, because he can be a top five defensive tackle easily, especially on passing downs, which I believe is what they're paying him to be, is a dominant three technique. He also is very good on stunts and twists, which Jacksonville runs with their four-man rush about as much as any team in the NFL. Stylistically, everything fits. All of this makes sense. It's just a matter of relying on the player to fulfill what is a mega contract.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of money. I like him as a player. I think it makes sense for a team like Jacksonville to dish it out. I mean, they obviously have it. The one deal that the Jaguars gave out that I just kind of hate is the money they gave to Chris Ivory. 5 years, $32 million, $10 million guaranteed for a guy that's 27, has a ton of injury concerns. You just drafted a running back in the second round, and now you just gave him more guaranteed money than every running back in the league not named LeSean McCoy, Jonathan Stewart, Adrian Peterson, Doug Martin, Lamar Miller, DeMarco Murray.
Well, when you put it that way, I don't see Ivory being the starter there. I think T.J. Yeldon is clearly the starter. I think T.J. Yeldon can get
$10 million guaranteed to a backup running back then.
Well, but okay, but you know what happens between now and then? They go out and they practice in minicamp. They have a bunch of training camp practices and preseason games. And eventually, whoever the best player is going to... Coaches don't care about this stuff once the season starts. They're not thinking contracts. They're thinking, I got to save my job. I got to win this game on Sunday. And in order to do that, Yeldon's going to be the guy that gets more touches because he's just a better player. Ivory's a nice player, but he's always been a complimentary back, always been best off the bench because he's such a violent, tenacious runner. You can't run that way 50 times a game. So I think Yeldon, they might think Ivory now, Yeldon's going to win this job, which makes Ivory overpaid then, which is kind of what you're saying anyway, isn't it?
That's what drives me crazy. Yes. The guy got 3 years and $6 million with 2.25 guaranteed when he signed with the Jets. Why is Chris Ivory a better prospect as a running back now than he was 3 years ago at age 24 with zero tread on his tires?
So who would you – they felt they needed a running back, correct? I mean, it's
sure.
Let's say they felt
pick
that.
Pick one in the sixth round.
You wanted to take a rookie and plug a guy in.
Yes. I mean, again, they have a ton of money, but these are the type of deals that it's just kind of lighting on fire. I mean, even if you want to be this type of team, I just don't get it at all. The other deal they signed –
Let me play devil's advocate real quick on that. And I'm not saying this is it, but just for the sake of talking football now, as you say, pick a guy in the sixth round. Perhaps Dave Caldwell is looking at his team and saying, we've got Blake Bortles, who's still very young. Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson are also, and Marquise Lee, our top three receivers, have only had two NFL seasons under their belt. TJ Yeldon has only one season under his belt. We're young at all the skill positions. Mercedes Lewis and Julius Thomas, our tight ends, are a little older, but I don't think that's a big factor. So maybe they wanted a veteran presence in the huddle and in the drills, whatever it is. They wanted a veteran handling the ball somewhere.
I guess so. That doesn't do it.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, man. I'm trying to rationalize. They must have had a reason for what they did. May have not been a good one. I'm trying to guess for you.
They keep guessing because that one's not going to sit super well with me. One of the other deals they signed that I actually like a little bit more is Tayshawn Gibson, who we talked about in our preview. A guy who was fantastic a couple years ago, had a down season last year, but can be a really special player, and he had been in Cleveland at times. So they paid him a lot of money, but I also think that's a guy where it's a little bit more worth the risk. You know, Tayshawn Gibson, I believe, is 24, 25. So, I mean, that's just the type of guy. He's 25 years old, and that's the type of risk to me that is way more worth it than $10 million guaranteed for Chris Ivory.
He was undrafted, too. Right? People forget that. He's an undrafted guy out of Wyoming. So hats off to him for developing and building a nice NFL career like this. I like the move because it finally defines Jacksonville's safety situation. They've had some young guys. They've had Josh Evans and Jonathan Cyprian, and they've kind of moved them around and interchanged them here and there, and they've put Sergio Brown in at times, and they've been looking for answers at the position, and answers haven't existed there. Well, when you bring in Gibson, now you've got your clear-cut center fielder. He can play the box, but he'll be used as a center fielder. He'll play Earl Thomas in the Jaguars-Seahawks-style scheme, which means Cyprian now has a clear-cut role in the Cam Chancellor variety as a strong safety. So we're talking about stability at the most unstable position in Jacksonville's scheme. And for that reason alone, I think then you add in the value of the turnovers that Gibson has been known to create. I think this is a very good signing. I'm on board with you there, Mays.
I believe they finished dead last in pass defense DVOA last season. 31st, I'm sorry. What they did in the first round of last year's draft and in free agency this year is go get pass rushers and a pre-ball hawking center fielding safety. So he's more or less another free agent signing. I mean, that's kind of what that is for them because he didn't play last year. So there's an influx of talent coming into that defense, and they need it because that defense was bad again last year, and eventually we're going to run out of time here for Gus Bradley.
Well, and they also have Fowler coming back, too. They have Dante Fowler, last year's number three
there's
pick.
No doubt. Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, they're clearly on the way in terms of the type of players that they need. So Tayshawn Gibson comes over from Cleveland. It seems like everything that's come out about Cleveland this week has not been great. I guess the negotiations with a couple different players were kind of off.
They've got some players there now, is the rumor, after
they had been negotiating pretty good faith for a while. Is it starting to get really worrisome about all of these guys leaving Cleveland? Your Mitchell Schwartzes, your Travis Benjamins, your Tayshawn Gibsons?
Well, Mitchell Schwartz is a good example because I from what I gather, I would almost guarantee you he decided he's out of Cleveland before this past season even ended up, right? He wasn't going to rejoin the organization. And that speaks volumes, because that's a guy who was brought in by the organization and has been there, and so he's seen all the nonsense that's gone on there, and he didn't even give it, my guess is he didn't even give it the time of day. Keep in mind, Mitchell Schwartz also joined Kansas City, where his brother Jeff Schwartz had played for a few years, and Jeff Schwartz loved playing in Kansas City under Andy Reid. So I'm sure it's not a coincidence that Mitchell Schwartz decided to go there. And that right there tells you everything you need to know about how the NFL works. Why are the Chiefs always winning 10 games when they should be winning 5 or 6? Well, because guys like Mitchell Schwartz want to play for him because the organization is so well run. Why are the Browns giving away good players to other teams and getting nothing out of those good players when they have them? Because their organization is run like a lemonade stand at times. So it's very telling, and I'm not at all surprised things have gone this way for Cleveland. I fear for the Browns. Alex Mack also left. There's a guy
I forgot to mention his
name.
Yeah, he was one of those other guys. I knew there was one more.
And they lost Travis Benjamin. It looks like the Browns, things could be getting worse before they get better for this team.
Yeah. I mean, they really – it's already taking a step back. They lose Johnny Manziel today. You have to assume they pick a quarterback second overall. And whoever that guy is, he's going to have his work cut out for him. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
What do you think about the Mitchell Schwartz contract? I kind of love it.
I like it, too. How much have he got? 33 over 5 years? Is that what it was?
Yep, and 20.7 guaranteed. I think
okay,
that's probably below the going rate for a guy who's as good as he is at a position that should be valued right now.
I agree. And they've been unstable at the position at right tackle. You know, I had an interesting conversation with someone at the combine, and it got me thinking about the right tackle position. I asked coaches, because you and I agree, Mays, that left tackle's overpriced in the NFL. You don't need to pay as much as you do for guys that in pass protection are nothing more than an insurance policy. But teams keep paying for it. And the reason I ask coaches all the time, why? And they always say it's, well, the biggest thing we fear, besides the QB getting hurt, which doesn't happen as much as you think on blindside hits, the biggest thing they fear is the sack fumble. Well, if you go back and look at sack fumbles, most of the guys that get them, the Robert Mathis, the Von Millers, Cliff Averill, I believe those are the leaders in it, J.J. Watt, they played left defensive end.
Yeah.
They come from the right side. So, and that's the ball is closer to the defensive end on the right side because the quarterbacks are right-handed than it is on the left side. So ball security is a big thing there, which I think means the right tackle position is every bit as valuable as the left tackle position. Also, because a lot of teams and their running backs prefer to run to their right rather than to their left. So you asked me, do I like the Mitchell Schwartz signing? I love it because I think right tackle is as valuable as left tackle, and you can get them at a better rate still. And another thing, a guy like Alex Smith, he needs to feel safe in the pocket. And if he's got pressure in his face, if his right tackle is getting beat, Alex Smith's going to break down way too early and abandon the play design. So if he has a right tackle he feels comfortable with, now all of a sudden Alex Smith's a more cerebral, a calmer player, and that also is worth money to the Chiefs.
I like what the Chiefs did for the most part and how they spent their money. They retained players that I liked. They brought back Jay Howard. They brought back Tom Bali. They brought back Derek Johnson. They paid Derek Johnson a lot, but he's invaluable to that defense. I mean, he's really invaluable to that defense. He's aging, but you still have to think, we're not who we are without him. And you saw that last year when he came back healthy. One of the guys they lost was Jeff Allen, who was one of a pretty substantial signing class for the Houston Texans, who spent a ton of money. And first and foremost, it starts with Brock Osweiler. Are you surprised that Denver let him get away?
I am surprised. I didn't foresee it, but I'm also very concerned about it, because here's what you need to understand. This is the Matt Flynn thing all over again. Only one team in the NFL really knows all there is to know about Brock Osweiler, and that is the Denver Broncos. They've seen him in practice. They've seen him in the film rooms. They see him every day in the locker room, etc. Everyone else has to speculate what he is because he's only started 7 games. So Houston speculated on Osweiler. They might say, oh, he's the guy we wanted all along, and maybe he is, but that doesn't change the fact they had to speculate. They're taking a little bit of a risk here. It concerns me that Denver let Osweiler get away for the difference of $2 million. Supposedly, they offered him $16 million. and Houston offered 18 and Denver backed out or wouldn't go. $16 million, that's almost $4 million less than the franchise tag value for QBs this year. Denver didn't have a franchise tag available, of course, but the point is they did not want to pay Osweiler market value. And you always have to wonder, why would that be? What do they know about Osweiler that other people don't know? Clearly, that they don't feel he's a franchise QB, because never in a million years would a team let a 25-year-old potential franchise QB just walk away and leave.
Yeah, I mean that has to worry you a little bit, but I also think if you're Houston, you're grasping at straws at this point. You have to do anything you can to upgrade that spot from where it was last year. And I believe that DeAndre Hopkins is the happiest man in America as it currently stands.
I don't disagree with you there. I think you're right. I'm not saying the Texans made a bad choice. I'm just saying I don't think I wouldn't worry about Denver as much as it might seem.
I agree with that.
We need to be.
Let's get to some of these other Texans signings. Jeff Allen's a guy we talked about in the preview, a player we both like. They trade him out for Brandon Brooks, who we'll get to when we talk about the Eagles. I feel like Brandon Brooks has a higher ceiling, but Jeff Allen was a decent player last year. I mean, I think this makes sense.
Yeah, I think both of those guys are a plug-and-play guard. I don't think it changes the dynamic of their team particularly much.
All right, what do you think about the Lamar Miller deal? I personally like him as a player. I think it's a lot of money, but it's not more money that Doug Martin got. I mean, it's actually right there. So they pretty much got paid the same amount. Doug Martin got one more year, $1 million more guaranteed. Where do you sit with both of those? Do you like Martin so much more that you think that Miller got overpaid a little bit based on what the market would have been for a running back?
Yeah, I probably. I like okay. Martin more in Tampa Bay scheme than I like Miller in Houston scheme. I think they're both fine. I get it. I understand the reason they signed Miller. This move doesn't move the needle for me, though. I don't look at this and say, well, now the Texans are for sure the best team in the AFC South. Not at all. I think they have a running back position. Someone's got to play it, and he's the guy they hired to play it.
Yeah, I think that's true. He's also 24. He's got way less carries than Martin does. I mean, he's a guy that's still pretty fresh. I don't love it just because I don't love spending money on running backs, but I'd much rather give Lamar Miller $14 million guaranteed than give Chris Ivory $10 million guaranteed. I mean, that's kind of where I'm sitting with it. And then, did they sign anybody else? Am I missing somebody?
No one of particular consequence that I can see. And they didn't have to address their defense, because that's one of the best defenses in the NFL, especially if Jadeveon Clowney ever develops, which I don't think he will, unfortunately. But you see the flashes. If those can be corralled, then that's a top three or four defense. It's already a top five or six defense. So the Texans weren't in a really bad spot. It's rare to see a team coming off a wild card appearance that needs a quarterback and a running back and maybe a little bit of offensive line reinforcements. But that's what they were.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. I mean, I like what they did. I feel like they're a better team than they were this week. I mean, at the beginning of this week, that's for sure. So let's go to the guy who Jeff Allen's going to kind of replace in Houston there, which is Brandon Brooks. And he went to Philadelphia on a pretty healthy deal. Philadelphia shelled out a lot of cash, man. I mean, they paid a lot of people, and they played a lot of different kinds of people. They trade DeMarco Murray. Howie Roseman pretty much taking the delete button to everything Chip Kelly did over the last 2 years. And I don't know. Brandon Brooks, 5 years, $40 million. That's a lot. They paid Rodney McLeod a solid chunk of change to start for them at safety. They brought Malcolm Jenkins back for a nice contract. I mean, this is a team that's throwing it around. How do you feel about it? Leotis McKelvin's another one. Leotis McKelvin's 30, by the way, if you want to feel old.
Yeah, thank you. I do. The McLeod is the story to me. I think that's a tremendous signing.
I know you'd like that.
I can't remember if you said on the podcast or not, but I've had legit people in the NFL who have had to deal with Rodney McLeod tell me they feel he's in the Earl Thomas class.
Yeah.
He's at the bottom of that class, not the top, but it's not a big class. There might be only one or two other guys in the league in that class. He's very rangy. He was very good in all facets with the Rams the last two seasons. I think this is a great move because it corrects a long-standing weakness for him. Now, they've got other issues still. Let's pour some cold water over it. They have no speed at wide receiver, so they'll have to address that.
Oh, it's still a disaster.
Yeah, it's a disaster. I don't think they're comfortable with their running backs. I think Matthews is a nice guy, but we heard he was available, so they're probably less than comfortable with him. The offensive line had some moving pieces. Maybe Brooks solidifies that. They think Lane Johnson can be a guy. Jason Peters is getting old, though, so what happens there? I don't think everything's settled there. And then defensively, they don't have any cornerbacks. It's Eric Rowe, who was not quite ready to play. I know they signed McKelvin, but McKelvin, if he's going to be your number two, that's pushing it just a little bit. So I think they still have some holes to address here. Mays, we've gone about a minute and a half on the Eagles now, and you have not mentioned Chase Daniel, which amazes me because you were the only guy who suggested he might be a starter somewhere.
What week is he the starter in Philly? Is it by week six, or are we going to wait till midseason?
I think it'll be by week one if he's going to become the starter. And this is the opposite of the Brock Osweiler situation almost. Denver knew everything about Osweiler and decided to let him go. Well, Philly, with Doug Peterson having coached Daniel in Kansas City, he knows everything about Daniel, and he decided to pay pretty good money to bring him in. $7 million a year is not backup money. That's almost double what most backups make in the NFL. This is an interesting one to me. I thought it was the most interesting contract signed just because of some of the writing it puts on the wall there in Philadelphia. And if you're Sam Bradford, you got a nice deal a week ago, but you got to be wondering, hey, what the hell, a little bit, don't you?
Hey. I'm ready for it, man. I'm embracing the Chase Daniel era. I'm pretty pumped about it. I was the one that said this could happen, and when I'm right, it's going to be so, so sweet.
Did you get to know him at all in college?
No, I did not cover the team while I was there, while he was playing. I was a little bit after him. My first year was Gabbert's first year.
Okay, so you're just a loyal Mizzou Tiger then.
Oh, it was just a great stretch of my life. I mean, their teams were really good, and he was a huge reason for it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. I went to a private liberal arts school that didn't have any football, and I paid full tuition because I transferred, and so I have, like, no passion remaining for my college. I don't hate it. I just, you know, I'm apathetic. So I envy you a little bit. Yeah, I envy you.
Let's do a couple more of these smaller deals that were given to some offensive linemen. Richie Incognito got paid. I think that we all thought that was a possibility. 3 years, 15.75 for Incognito. Based on his play this year, that's not a bad amount of money. And I think that if you're Buffalo, you kind of understood that you just couldn't get worse in those spots because you needed to be strong there the way your offense works. So I think that deal makes sense.
Yes, if they're a gap scheme running game most of the time, which means you have a pull blocker, and 99 times out of 100, at least for the first three-fourths of the last season, Incognito was that pull blocker. He would have been a big loss for them if he had gotten away.
Alex Boone gets paid by Minnesota. I know that he hasn't been the player he was when he was a borderline all-pro a couple years ago, but I still really like that signing because they need to get better on that offensive line, and he is still a good player. They didn't toss him a huge amount of money. It's 4 years, 26.8. He's still only 28 years old. It makes sense to me. So I completely understand where you'd want to do that.
Boone gets to the he can get to the perimeter in the run game as a blocker.
Definitely.
And that's important because Minnesota did not run the ball outside last year, almost never. And part of that, Adrian Peterson just isn't very comfortable running to the boundary. As good as he is at it, he's not comfortable with it from what I hear and what you can see on film. The other part was the Vikings didn't feel they had offensive linemen who were athletic enough to play on the move like that. So if you inject some athleticism and some mobility at the guard position with Boone, he's not nimble-footed, but he can get from A to B relatively well, then that can change the dynamic or expand the dynamic of your rushing attack. So I like the move for that reason. You have to look at a lot of times with teams, the way they look at it, it's not just who are we bringing in, but how bad of a weakness did we have that we are trying to correct here.
I totally agree. And you know who I thought about that with? The two centers that signed, and that's kind of what I was thinking about. Ben Jones signing in Tennessee for a pretty nice chunk of change. Ben Jones is not a name, and he made four years, $17.5 million. And Alex Mack got paid a lot of money to go to Atlanta. But both of those teams had pretty abysmal play from center last year. And that's the thing. Sometimes you're willing to overpay for guys just because you can't live with the alternative anymore.
That's what the Bears did with Jermon Bushrod a couple years ago. They overpaid for him because all they were thinking was, we need a real NFL player here. And that's exactly what is happening with Tennessee and Atlanta at center right now.
I agree 100%, and I agree with you, and I agree with the logic of that, too. There are certain teams where weaknesses... Remember, for example, like a few years ago, how bad the Ravens were at wide receiver every year, and it seemed like they always had a Super Bowl team, except they had nobody to throw the ball to. So eventually, they had to decide, we're going to sign a guy like Steve Smith, we're going to sign an Anquan Boldin, we're going to draft Torrey Smith high, whatever it was. It's sometimes it's okay to overcorrect a weakness. Now, you walk a fine line there, because Mays, as you recall, we ripped the Giants early in this podcast for doing that with Olivier Vernon. But there's some logic to it. Is when you've been really bad at the same position for a lot of years, sometimes it's worth paying a premium just to say, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Let's get to a team that I think is maybe the most interesting team in free agency, not because of who they signed, but because of how many players they had to sign and because of how many they didn't. So the Bengals had like 17 guys that were free agents coming into this situation. Both of their receivers outside of A.J. Green are on new teams now. Marvin Jones signed with the Detroit Lions. 5 years, $40 million with $20 million guaranteed. That is not a bad contract. And then Mohamed Sanu gets a really nice deal, which was $32.5 million over 5 years with $14 million guaranteed. Which of those do you like better, first of all?
I hate to say it, I'm not thrilled with either of them. I like Jones one because I think Jones is a nice player. The problem is Jones is replacing Calvin Johnson, so you still downgraded there, which is no fault of anyone's. You're not going to just sign Calvin Johnson again, but that's a tough one to me.
I don't like either of them. I think Marvin Jones is a better player, so I hate it less. But this is also a situation that I didn't want to see Marvin Jones in. I wanted to see Marvin Jones get the deal Mohamed Sanu just got from Atlanta. That was my ideal outcome because I think he's a number two receiver. With this deal, he is 12th in guaranteed money for receivers. He is the 12th highest paid receiver in the NFL on a guaranteed money basis. That is too much because that is not what Marvin Jones is, and it's exactly what I didn't want to have happen with this.
The one with Sanu, he's not a number two NFL receiver. He's that kind of talented. He can be that, but he hasn't done that before because the Bengals didn't ask him to play every down unless someone else was hurt and he had to. The Bengals felt that he had limitations in terms of volume of reps he could get. His snaps needed to be managed. He was more effective that way. Atlanta probably didn't know that because there's no one that would have told him that. And it's certainly Sanu's camp's not going to tell him that. And now they're going to ask him to be an every down number two receiver. I that's a tough one to me. The positive side, though, is Sanu is an upgrade over what they had with Roddy White the last few years, probably both in the locker room and certainly on the field. So, and it's a well-designed offense that does a lot with crossing patterns. I think Sanu can be effective on those. I give a little bit of pause, though, because if the Falcons think they're getting a bona fide number two, I think they'll be a little disappointed.
Well, that's good, because he got more guaranteed than Randall Cobb.
A little sarcasm for my buddy Robert Mays there.
If he can't be a number two receiver and he got more money than Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, we're probably running into some issues. Let's stick in Cincinnati for a second and go to the defensive side of the ball. They bring back Adam Jones on a pretty sizable deal, but I believe they can get out of it pretty quickly. He's obviously aging. I think that that's a guy they really wanted to have back. And then the other guy that we talked about a pretty decent chunk of time on the preview podcast was George Aloka, who we both like. And I really wanted to see him land in Minnesota. They were apparently in the running, but the Bengals managed to bring him back, which I think is a great move.
Yeah, the market for Iloka was a little softer than I thought it would be.
I agree.
Because he came back on, I think he got about $6 million a year on average.
Yep.
And my guess is that he could have signed a deal like that prior to the season and been retained for the Bengals before he hit the open market. And so when you hit the open market, the thinking is that'll drive your price up because there are more bidding teams. I don't think that happened with Iloka, which surprises me. That doesn't diminish the player he is, and it tells you that the Bengals value him because they brought him back. Would you have re-signed Adam Jones? I'm not sure. there were guys on that team that were not happy with him after the playoff loss to Pittsburgh. That wasn't a smooth, that hasn't been smoothed over the way we might be led to believe.
I can't speak to that.
He's certifiable there, some people in Cincy. So why would you? I'm a little surprised they brought him back, but they must value stability and veteran play at cornerback, because Mike Zimmer was always like that, and now Paul Gunther's shown that he's a little bit like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what they want. They want guys that know what they're doing in that system, and that's exactly what they're getting with him. One guy.
Would you have re-signed him?
Probably not. I mean, but I don't know the extenuating circumstances or the degree to which you need to know that defense in order to be successful there. So
yeah, well, I mean, they played cover two almost all last season, and typically teams that play just basic cover two don't need premium cornerbacks. Now, they did a little, they're not going to play cover two on every snap, but the point is that the Bengals are not nearly as schematically complex as we might think they are because they've had good players so far. But typically that speaks to your front seven, not necessarily your back four. I'm a little surprised they paid that much to retain a cornerback, given some of the other guys they've lost in free agency.
Let's get to one of the guys that they didn't re-sign yet, which is right tackle Andre Smith. He's among a group of offensive linemen and just players in general who are still kind of waiting by the time we record this. Russell Okung, Kelvin Beachum, Casey Hayward, Eric Weddle. Who among those guys are you surprised is still available, and who among those guys is your favorite and would like to see on your team if you were picking one?
Casey Hayward by a significant margin.
Okay.
Wide margin. Yeah, because he can play man, as we talked about last week, he can play man or zone, inside and outside, in the slot or outside. And there are a small handful of starting caliber corners in the NFL who can truly do that. I'm surprised Hayward did not get scooped up on day one of free agency, given that every team now needs three starting cornerbacks and one of them has to play inside.
Well, the Bears are apparently sniffing around him, which I don't hate at all. I would very much like him to be a part of the Chicago Bears organization. And I am very happy that Danny Trevathan is a member of the Chicago Bears organization. The Bears signed Trevathan. I think it makes total sense based on their needs. They didn't have to pay a ton for him. And news came out today that they might want to sign Jarrell Freeman too. It's like similar to what the Jets did last year, just revamping an entire position group via free agency because you have to do it. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they signed both of those guys.
And both of those guys would indicate a tremendous upgrade over their predecessors.
Yeah, there's no doubt. This is a weird place to finish, but kind of a parallel situation here. The two tight ends that were in Indianapolis, one remains, one does not. Dwayne Allen, 4 years, $29.4 million, was $16 million guaranteed. That is a lot of money for a guy who does not catch a lot of passes and has been injury prone. I know you like Dwayne Allen as a player. Are you surprised about this?
I think a little bit. I think what the Colts did here was there's a little bit of an insurance policy in play. I don't know how they feel about this year's tight end rookie class. They probably aren't wanting to necessarily put a rookie into Rob Chudzinski's offense. Now, Chudzinski does a lot with tight ends. He was a tight end himself. He was at the cutting edge of the total two tight end phenomenon that came across the NFL after the lockout a few years ago. So they feel they need two of them. And if they had zero, well, you can't go into the draft needing the draft two guys. In fact, they tried that a few years ago with Fleener and Allen, and it didn't work out exceptionally well. So I think they decided we got to keep one. If that's the case, Allen wins that almost every time because Fleener is too unreliable.
Yeah, and I mean, he just got a ton of money. I mean, a ton of money from the Saints. I mean, that's one of my least favorite contracts of all of free agency so far. I mean, I have nothing against Kobe Fleener, but that one just makes me scratch my head. For a team that doesn't have a lot of cap room, for a team that has a ton of needs elsewhere, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
I think their thinking on it was this. Their offense needs a tight end just by design. They do more with passing the ball between the numbers and along the hash marks. They do more of that than any team in the NFL by a wide margin, which is, by the way, that's why they spend so much money on guards and centers over the years, because Breeze is short and everything he throws takes place down the middle of the field.
Sure.
So they need a big target there. And they got rid of Marcus Colston, so their seam route runner is gone. Someone who can catch those back shoulder balls down the seam, he's gone. So that now they need a tight end. They're not going to re-sign Ben Watson because, you know, I think they see he's old and he was productive for him, but he's just a guy at this point in his career. What Flaner is, he is tall and he is long. And when you have that kind of body type, you can be effective down the seams. And there weren't really any other tight ends on the market with that kind of body type, except for Mercedes Lewis, who's more of a blocker at this point, and Jared Cook, who isn't reliable enough. He's kind of like Flaner, actually, is not super reliable. And I think it came down to, my guess is they decided between Flaner and Cook and wanted to go with Flaner. So I don't like the signing either, Mays, because of what you said. I don't think Flaner is worth the amount of money they're paying. But certain teams have certain needs at a position more than others, and the Saints in that system, tight end's an important position for them.
I would much rather have Ben Watson for 2 years and $7 million than Kobe Flaner for 5 years and $35 million. That's where I'm sitting with this.
Yeah, and when you put it that way, that does sound different. I think if Marcus Colston were still there, or a guy like Colston, they probably would have felt more comfortable doing that. But if Colston's gone, then they need a big, tall guy to run down the seams. And Watson's not that kind of body type. Flaner is. Of course, they could also find a big, tall wide receiver, I'm sure, somewhere for less money than they paid to Flaner as well. So, you know, maybe we're on the same page there about those guys.
We'll end on this. Got to pour one out for Matt Forte. The Matt Forte over era in Chicago is officially over because he is now a Jet. And 3 years, $12 million, $8 million guaranteed. A lot of money for a guy who's about to turn 30. I assume that a decent amount of it is front-loaded, but I think he makes their offense better. I think he's a better player than Chris Ivory. So right now, I feel like that group of weapons with the Jets plus that offensive line, they still have an issue at quarterback, and we'll see what happens with Fitzpatrick. But that offense has a chance to be good with the right guy behind center. I really believe that.
Yeah, because the Jets, Chan Gailey, their coordinator, he used a four wide receiver set on nearly one third of the snaps last season, which was by far the most in the league. And when it wasn't four wide, it was often three wide. What I'm saying, this is a spread offense. And when you have that, you need a running back that can split out and play wide receiver and create mismatches and impact the defense and all the stuff that comes with it. Well, that's what Matt Forte is. And you know you're not going to have to gamble with him or develop him because he's clearly proven to be that type of guy in Chicago. So I like the signing. I think this is a win-win for all parties involved. And Mays, we agreed on Forte, right? He hasn't. He'll slow down at some point, but I don't think we've seen that yet in terms of his pure running talent.
No, he's still a good player. I certainly still believe that. All right, man. I think that's all we got. We breezed through most of the guys we're talking about. I think that we probably missed a couple names, but obviously there will be some more things to shake out, and we'll get to a couple of the guys we happen to miss. But for now, we always appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much, and we will be back next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.